Real College Podcast is presented by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and is a production of Radio K.
You are tuned into another episode of Real College Podcast, Quarantine Edition, and I'm your host, Casey McCabe. With the end of another school year comes the inevitable graduation of our seniors. This semester, our current cultural affairs reporter, Casey Salazar, has joined the ranks of RCP alums and has moved on from the U and Radio K. In Casey's absence, we will be listening back to some of her favorite pieces that she crafted while here at Real College Podcast. Coming up, we will discover makeup and cosmetic art, discuss impromptu tattoos, take a dive into the food culture of the Twin Cities, profile a local business, and unearth how pets help us cope with stress. You won't want to miss this. Be sure to stick around. With traditional visual art forms defined by painting, drawing, and sculpting, the 20th and 21st centuries have brought forth many new mediums, both digital and otherwise. During her time here at Real College Podcast, Casey looked into one visual medium that has been growing in popularity. Here's Casey with more.
How do we go from some waterproof mascara, powder to reduce shininess, and a neutral lipstick to a black, glittery, smoky eyeshadow look with full-on contour and bronzer to sculpt your face? YouTube beauty gurus,
hello guys,
and Instagram influencers,
hi sisters,
are one of the main contributors to the changes we have seen in the makeup industry in the past few years. New makeup products being launched constantly, new makeup brands being created every year.
We're unveiling the Jeffree Star Cosmetics Blue Blood eyeshadow palette and the entire
new makeup videos collection being released every day, showing everyday people how to do their makeup, how to improve their makeup skills, how to be creative with makeup. But can we consider doing makeup art?
Let's say like this month, November, like it's Thanksgiving. So like I use like the Thanksgiving colors, like a brown, gold, or do some bling or like do some glam.
Roxy, or Rosa Marie Arroyo Fontanes, is an uprising local makeup artist in the Twin Cities. Born in Puerto Rico, Roxy moved to Minnesota when she was just 9 years old. Her love for makeup was discovered early on when she was in middle school. Once she graduated from high school, she decided to take a non-traditional path by going to Empire Beauty School in Bloomington, Minnesota.
I just do my inspiration, like maybe something's in my head what I want, or I look in Instagram or other social medias like from inspiration.
Creative looks, new makeup trends, social media inspiration. I had to ask Roxy, is makeup art?
I think makeup is like in a category of the arts because you're really being creative of what you're doing. So it's not like you're doing makeup right or you're not doing makeup wrong. It's really just being creative.
But traditional beauty school didn't feed her creativity.
I graduated, but I didn't get my diploma because it's very, my license, it was very hard to get it. And I was not really interested of really hair or skincare that I really want to do on that journey.
Sitting with her in her mid-sized room, her fun and bubbly personality fills the space. She has a closet and a dresser with a TV on top, typical. But in the left-hand corner of her room is where all the magic happens. She has her makeup station set up, which consists of a small white desk with one drawer from IKEA, a makeup tier organizer from Amazon, and a mounted lighted mirror she bought at Costco. Well, we find out that cosmetology school didn't meet Roxy's expectation. Roxy wanted to focus more on makeup, but after graduating, instead of focusing on getting her cosmetology license, she gets a job at Victoria's Secret as a seasonal associate to start paying off her student loans. This put her career on halt.
Then this whole COVID thing that I really rethink what I really wanted to do, so I start playing with makeup. So let's see if I can pull the scale a little bit. So I did. My mom is a makeup, she was my model. And I was like, okay, hey, I can see I'm really good at this.
Roxy decided to go back to what she loves best, makeup. She signed up to take a specialized 8-week makeup course, which taught her the history of makeup, the importance of skincare, how to apply makeup based on face shape, and she learned how to perform new makeup techniques and trends.
Then this summer, I talked with one of my aunts to see if there's like any school or anything in Puerto Rico. So in August, I just did the makeup course. I just graduated. on the basics, and then now January I'm gonna go advanced.
The makeup course in Puerto Rico was not only less expensive than courses taught in Minnesota, but it was also her home base. Going back to Puerto Rico got Roxy thinking about how it all started in the first place.
I got this really makeup, like basically beauty stuff, from my mom. My mom, when she was like basically my age, she really started a business back in Puerto Rico, and she used to be like a hairstylist and do nails and makeup, but unfortunately she didn't catch that dream for her. So I do want to continue that legacy for her.
Roxy wants to become a successful full-time makeup artist. She also wants to be a makeup teacher and show people the art behind makeup. But is there more to art than creativity? I talked to Laura Pilarski, a University of Minnesota graduate with a BA in art history and a minor in classical and Near Eastern archaeology. I asked Laura her take on what is art?
So now, kind of in our current moment, if you asked, you know, what is art, someone would give a really broad definition. Someone would say, you know, something that makes you feel something, maybe, you know, a picture or a visual or like performative experience that takes skill or looks good. But if you ask, you know, a 17th century French aristocrat, they would be like, well, art is this very specific thing. It's a beautiful visual experience.
Coming from a woodworking family, art was always surrounding Laura. Although Laura doesn't consider herself a, quote, gifted artistically person, end quote, she does consider herself creative. After finding out that you don't need to be good at art, this led her to take an intro course of art history at Concordia University in St. Paul. Laura realized quickly she wanted to dive into art history much further, leading her to transfer to the U of M to complete her undergrad degree in art history. Because she is an art historian, I asked Laura if makeup is seen in the history of art.
Pharaohs in ancient Egypt, they always have like beautiful cat eyes. They're gilded if they're on a sarcophagus. They're known for having that really drastic cat eye with the dark black coal colors. Looking at makeup, especially in an artistic lens, it really can tell us a lot about people or culture, different beauty standards at the time, what people thought was beautiful and why, and maybe give us a little clue into that. It can also tell us about perceptions of femininity. It can tell us a little bit about gender too, and also different classes.
I decided to go on Google search and type ancient civilization makeup. Sure enough, several sites pulled up showing the history of makeup from ancient times. I found out that the Chinese used gum, gelatin, beeswax, and egg to stain their fingernails to show their social class. In Rome, people made a paste out of flour and butter to cover up pimples. And in India, henna was used as a hair dye. It is obvious that being creative led to the creation of these makeup routines these civilizations had.
I was thinking about the different elements that you put together for makeup. It's a lot like having an eyeshadow palette. It's called a palette. You know, you're creating a look, you're creating a type of art. And I thought a lot about color theory. If you mix together certain eyeshadows, it gets muddy and kind of brown. So you have to know a little bit about color theory. Thinking about composition, like even if you think about contouring, you're thinking about the composition of your face. So you're thinking about where your cheekbones are, you know, where the high points of your face are. If you're highlighting, you have YouTubers creating crazy looks that are fantastic and beyond what we've seen before in the makeup industry. I definitely think it's an art.
Laura currently works at the Wiseman Art Museum as the education program assistant. As an art historian, I asked Laura to tell me her own definition of what is art?
I think art is kind of more of an experience that you have internally. Even if I'm walking down the street and the trees and the streetlight looks great, I think that's kind of a form of art. It's an experience that I've had that tells me more about what I like to experience. I think art is kind of something you find yourself in, kind of like a mirror in a way. So thinking about makeup in that sense, I think makeup is definitely an experience. I don't think art necessarily takes skill. And I think that a lot of things can be art.
Makeup art and art are in the same category. I guess it's just more like really creativity, because it's not like one day you think, be like, oh yeah, I got this. If one makeup doesn't look good, you want to try it again and be more creative or add more color or add more glitter. You know, it's like art.
For the University of Minnesota, Casey Salazar.
Whether carefully planned or done on a whim, getting a tattoo is an undeniably permanent experience. In the next segment, Casey asked our fellow gophers about their thoughts on the impromptu tattoo. Here's Casey with more.
Have you ever asked yourself, if you were to get a tattoo right now, what would you get? Although I did get some.
I wouldn't get one.
I'll probably not get a tattoo.
Is there a reason why?
Yeah, because it hurts.
And lots of. At the beginning, I got some interesting responses. Let's listen to what University of Minnesota students have to say.
I get a tattoo of like a rose.
I would get a tattoo of my cat.
I've thought about it. I have one right now. I don't really like give a whole lot of meaning to tattoos. So I think I'd probably get something like zodiac sign related. I'm a Leo, so that seems like a Leo thing to do.
My grandma's initial with a little like halo above it.
A triangle.
I would get something floral.
I guess like the first thing that popped into my head would be like maybe like a bird.
I would get a dinosaur on my like butt cheek.
Ooh, why a dinosaur?
I wanted to do it on like the last day of the decade to be like, oh, you know, my 20s are over or whatever. But honestly, I'd get it right now if I could.
Casey Salazar, University of Minnesota.
During her time as the current cultural affairs reporter at Real College Podcast, Casey explored the food scene here in the Twin Cities.
When tourists come to Minnesota, they might walk around the Twin Cities, maybe take a swim at one of our 11,842 lakes, or go and ride the Nickelodeon Universe, located inside of one of the biggest malls in the United States. These are all attractions here in Minnesota. But no one can say they have been in Minnesota without trying our staple, unique, must-have burger, the Juicy Lucy.
It's just such a simple story and turned into a wonderful landmark for Minnesota.
This is Amy Ferriancheck, and she is general manager at Matt's Bar, known as the home of the Juicy Lucy, located in South Minneapolis. Amy shares a story of how the Juicy Lucy came to be.
One afternoon it was kind of slower, and Matt and a few regular customers, they were bored, and they all kind of like, well, you know, let's see what we can create. So Matt and this other customer started to say, well, let's use a bottom patty, put a cheese in the middle, fold it, and then top patty. And then they figured out quick that you had to release the pressure in there. So cooked it on one side, flipped it over, and he poked it so it wouldn't blow up. And then put it on a bun with some onions, and him and the regular customer took a bite and said, whoa, that's one hot Juicy Lucy.
For a little bit of context, back in 1954, Matt's Bar was bought by Matt and Donna Bristol. That same year, Matt created the Juicy Lucy.
Back in the 50s, you had the regular morning crew for coffee, then you had your afternoon regulars, and then you had your late afternoon regulars. There was a lot more bar sitting at that time. That one regular customer just said, hey, why don't Matt, you try making them the Juicy Lucy? And it just got more requests and more requests and more popular, where Matt had to, he just like, this is crazy, you know?
You might ask, why is Juicy Lucy spelled incorrectly? Well, back in 1954, Matt had ordered new menus for the bar, but the company misspelled Juicy by forgetting the I.
And he's like, well, I kind of like it incorrectly spelled. It kind of stands out. So he never corrected the Juicy Lucy because, you know, it's supposed to have an I in there.
What is surprising about the Juicy Lucy is how simple but delicious it is. It is composed of a bun, beef patty, American cheese, sauteed onions, and pickles. That's it. But there's more to why the recipe is so consistent at Matt's Bar.
We use the same meat company. We use the same American cheese while we grill our own onions. We use the same pickle. I think that's also one of our secrets too.
There is no doubt that the Juicy Lucy from Matt's Bar is a must-have. Recognized nationwide, even President Barack Obama stopped on Matt's Bar for one of his visits in Minnesota back in 2014 to have a Juicy Lucy. Today, the Juicy Lucy is a staple food item in Minnesota's food culture.
I definitely feel we're definitely a landmark for Minnesota.
Remember, if Juicy is spelled correctly with an I, you might not be eating the right burger. Moving on, I wanted to find out why is food and culture related beyond just recipes. This led me to have a talk with Craig Hassel. He is an associate professor and an extension specialist in food and nutrition here at the University of Minnesota. He is also an elder leader in an American European learning community who works with different cultural communities. He shared a food movement going on in Minnesota right now.
Well, one of the significant movements happening right now is a movement that's called food sovereignty. And what that is work going on in not only tribal communities, but the urban indigenous communities are really working hard to reclaim their food traditions pre-settler contact.
Before Europeans invaded the continent, indigenous groups had very sophisticated systems of hunting and gathering, planting, harvesting, and gardening, and lots of food traditions. But these systems slowly disappear when Europeans brought and introduced their food culture.
And so one of the things that's happened in the last 20 or 25 years is tribal communities have recognized that even though modern science and a lot of our programs designed to improve health and nutrition have made a difference, they haven't really allowed the communities to recover health in the way that they know that they can be healthy.
The goal of bringing back these traditions is bringing the health back. Health in this context means understanding the significance of foods, the traditional use of the foods, and how they were part of the traditional lifestyle. It's about recovering the meaning and the connection it provides.
For example, down at in South Minneapolis, in the Midtown Global Market, there's a new food operation. The sous chef has created a business where he's feeding the community and revising and recovering a lot of traditional foods and traditional dishes for the indigenous communities in not only South Minneapolis, but all over the metro area. He's not only making foods for delivery, but he's got a demonstration kitchen where he's teaching cooking and teaching about some of the foods and how to use them.
Food brings us together. Every gathering begins with food, and it's a very traditional way to bring people together. The easiest way to share your culture is through food because it's the easiest way to engage with one another. Because at the end of the day, food brings us back to our origins, to our roots.
But food has so much more to do with health besides the chemical composition of the food. You know, the importance of the food, the connection that that holds, the way that brings people together, the meaning of the foods, the history of the foods, the memory of the foods, all of that can create health as well.
For Real College Podcast, I'm Casey Salazar.
In addition to highlighting the city's food scene, Casey also did a profile on a quirky local auto business.
As I park onto Mr. Tire's parking lot on Maryland and Rice Street, I notice how busy the intersection is. Cars, buses, people are constantly on the move. Well, I turn off my car, I get out, and start walking towards the shop. I open the door, and I am greeted by Bob. Robert Carlin, known as Bob. Bob is a 70-year-old man from Edina, Minnesota, and he is the owner of Mr. Tire in St. Paul.
When I was a kid, my parents had a Dodge wagon that was Mom's car, and my dad had his own car, right? And when I was like 18, it kind of fell to me to maintain the car. And it needed a tune-up. It would not run right at all. And I put spark plugs in, that didn't fix it. I'm walking through the grocery store and saw a magazine. How to tune your car? This month's Chrysler. Well, I got a Dodge, close enough. So I bought the magazine for 50 cents and it showed exactly how to do it, how to put the point, they're called points. So I followed the directions, bought a set of points for $2 and the car ran perfect. I was just stunned.
Bob is a white man who has a few gray hairs left on his head, is missing several of his teeth and has lots of freckles. Bob is sitting at his stool behind his desk, in front of his computer. He is wearing a navy blue hoodie with black pants. His cane is next to him. Bob is also known as Mr. Tire.
Mr. Tire? I have a few. What size are you looking for? No, I don't have any used ones in that size. Try the junk. Pardon? About 120 each. All right, bye.
His shop is not a modern tire shop with a waiting room for his customers, hot coffee while they wait, or even magazines so that they can entertain themselves while they wait for their service. The floors are dirty. There are receipts, bills, envelopes everywhere. A collection of cigarette butts hanging out on his desk. And his generic cola is always a must on his desk.
So one day, I'm not going to my route. I decided to stop at the Embers on White Bear 94 and have some steak and eggs. And so I pull into Embers and there's Pete's car. I walk in and him and another guy are sitting at the table. They both got Bibles out and they're really excited about what they're reading. I'm like, that's kind of weird. How could you be excited about that old? So I sat down with Pete and I sat there for 2 hours talking to him. And I walked out of the place, and he says to me, you know, I think you should sit down in the front seat of my car and ask Jesus to come into your life. And all of a sudden, it seemed like a great idea. for the first time in my life, God touched me. I knew he was real. And he said to me down inside, this is real, Bob. Don't pass it by. So I decided to ask God to come into my life. Not just God, Jesus specifically. And I was born again at that moment. And my life has never been the same.
At this point in life, Bob is jobless. He is living on insurance and workers' compensation. And his wife is going through the last stages of kidney failure.
And I didn't know what to do. I was getting kind of desperate. So once again, I turned to the boss. I said, what do you want me to do? I will go anywhere, I'll do anything. Just make it happen, all right? The very next day, a guy called me up who started a chain of muffler shops called Automax. He was an old friend of mine. I said, hey, Bob, I got an idea. I want to give you a job. And that's how I got into the car business.
Customers are constantly stopping by and asking help from Mr. Tire.
Hi.
Hi. We needed a used tire put on.
What size?
I'll tell
you if I got one. When you're in your 50s, looking for a job is really hard. Nobody wants to hire you because you're too old. I got a phone call one day. Hi, my name is Steve Buck. I own the Mr. Tire over on Central, and I own two others. I'm looking for a manager for one of mine. I saw your resume on Minnesota Workforce, which I had forgotten I'd even put it there. I want to talk to you. And he hired me to run this place. So he came over one day, me and him, kicked everybody out, took over. And that's how I got into Mr. Tire.
Bob decides to leave Mr. Tire when he is offered an extra $1,000 a month, a position out of tune. But 3 months later, Bob is laid off because the shop couldn't, quote, afford him, end quote.
So now I'm back at home again. And one day I'm looking through job listings and I see that Steve's looking for somebody to run the shop again. They sent him an email. So I took over again. I worked here for another year and then I bought it from him. When I first started here, I was 58 when I first bought it. I was still doing half the work in the shop. Because my help, I didn't have good enough help to do some of the stuff. So anyway, I wound up here. Here I am.
Are you happy here?
Yes and no. Well, because it's brutal. I mean, it doesn't look like I'm working hard, but you watch me work here. It's just kind of like stuff flying at you from every direction. I want to get rid of the place now because I'm just too damn old and beat up to do it anymore.
Casey Salazar, University of Minnesota.
For our spring cleaning episode, Casey did a piece looking into how pets can help us cope with stress.
When I go on a walk, even on a rough day, if I see a dog, I will ask to pet them, and that usually makes my day. But I believe I am not the only one who acts this way. I have observed other people, and even students on campus, asking to pet other humans' pets. I think it's a Minnesotan thing to do. Here in Minnesota, we even have restaurants that open their patios to their guests and dogs, and offer dedicated dog menus. I believe it's safe to say we Minnesotans love our dogs, and when we see one, we will ask to pet them. Beyond just petting pets, I wanted to know how pets help us cope with stress, especially during pandemic times. But first, we need to understand what is stress.
I think about stress as being a gap between your list of responsibilities or expectations and then your ability to meet those demands.
This is the definition of stress according to Professor Liza Meredith. She is an associate professor at the University of Minnesota in the psychology department. Professor Meredith explains how people shoulder stress.
And then I think the experience of stress can vary from person to person. Like some people experience it primarily in their emotions. They feel more irritable or overwhelmed or sad, anxious. Whereas others experience stress more so in their thinking. They just notice racing thoughts or maybe having more irrational thinking. Whereas other people experience it more in their behavior. They just notice they're like quick to cut people off or tend to overeat. And so although we all probably have experienced stress from time to time, it may kind of manifest differently for each of us.
Based on research Professor Meredith has conducted, she has found that academics is the number one reason why students suffer stress. Within academics, there are different stressors, the most common one being not having enough time to meet academic demands. But now with COVID, It's a new stress students have to deal with.
So I think there are some students that changing to primarily online learning hasn't really been too big of a deal. Or for some, they actually may even prefer it. Like I have some students in my online sections who like online schools for me, it's great. But I think for many others, online learning and the pandemic has made academics that much harder because you don't necessarily feel as connected to the subject when you're not meeting with an instructor or your peers face to face. In addition to that, it requires the student to really be in charge and responsible, right? So like you have to remember to check your assignments on Canvas or to like do a discussion post at a certain time. Like the onus is really on the student to stay on top of things.
As we all know, stress can affect your physical health and mental health. Having a stressful day once in a while will not affect you negatively. Stress will only lead to problematic effects if it's consistent and prolonged. Professor Meredith shares her findings on how pets can help us humans cope with stress.
Having a pet does seem to relieve stress. And there's a number of different theories about why that is. But sounds like through research studies, there's been a link that ownership of a pet decreases cortisol, which is like the stress hormone in our body, and also lowers blood pressure. So there does seem to be a link between people having a pet and showing benefits in their physical health and their stress response.
I can definitely attest that having dogs have helped me relieve some stress during stressful times. Being able to distract myself with my dog by taking them on a walk, not only they get excited, but I also start to feel better. I also wanted to get more insight, a personal testimony, to see if what I felt, others also felt.
And my life has gotten a lot better. They definitely bring happiness and joy.
This is Brenda Gutierrez Rosas, a senior at St. Thomas University, double majoring in psychology and family studies. She owns a 7-month-old male shih tzu named Toby. Brenda shares why they got a pet.
We got him because we started talking about getting a pet early in the summer. We all feel like we're all grown enough to like take care of a pet and take on the responsibilities. And then my brother kind of help figure out everything into like getting a pet. In August, we were notified that we could have one of the babies that the mom was having. In October, a couple months later, we finally got to pick him up and meet him.
When getting a new puppy and never having owned a pet before is life-changing. Lots of things change when adopting a new pet, such as new routines, more spending, and less free time. But not all of these changes are seen negatively.
It's changed in a positive way. Like, I have more responsibilities and I have to like take care of someone who like fully depends on me. So I feel like that's really great because it kind of helps me go about my day and have a motivation to like wake up and like do things as opposed to like just kind of sitting and not doing anything. So he just brings a lot of joy and like responsibility, but like in a positive way.
As college students, stress is always surrounding us at certain points in the semester, whether it's midterms, finals, or lots of homework. Brenda shares how Toby helps her relieve her stress.
I had a couple exams, like papers due a couple weeks ago, for example, and that was just a lot of stress going on. So I was extremely stressed. And I feel like whenever I'm around him, like I can forget about the assignments and forget about what's going on and just kind of like give him attention, give him love. He loves me absolutely. He's like loyal to me. So it's like really nice to just kind of think about him and play around with him and not have to worry about like stressful factors in my life.
It is no secret that the pandemic has changed our lives drastically, from stay-at-home orders to avoid physical socializing, to wearing a mask everywhere. The pandemic itself caused a lot of stress.
Back when the pandemic started, we went into like lockdown and everything shut down and like everything went online. I was doing really bad mentally. There was a lot of stress and a lot of things going on. So my mental health wasn't at its finest. And it kind of got better as I got hobbies to kind of keep myself busy during quarantine like everyone else did. Like there was that baking time, there was like crafts and everything and all that. But then it kind of got worse over the summer again with just like other factors going on in my life. And when we got him, I think I was once again at like a low point. So my mental health wasn't at its finest. But ever since we've got him, I'm not saying that my mental health is like gone and everything's better, but I definitely feel that he like helps me out a lot and get through the days. So if I didn't have him, I think I'd still be in that same position I was like a year ago, if not even like worse.
I had to conclude by asking, if everyone was stable, had the time and desire, and would be responsible, should people own a pet?
I definitely think everyone should own a pet. They bring so much happiness and so much joy. I mean, I wanted a pet since like who knows how long, and then I finally got one, and my life has gotten a lot better. Not everyone can own a pet, but if everyone can own a pet, I would 100% recommend it.
For Real College Podcast, I'm Casey Salazar.
Thank you for your time, dedication, and passion, Casey. Hopefully we will see you around in Minneapolis real soon, and congratulations on graduation. That's all for this episode of Real College Podcast. Stay safe, Minnesota. We hope you stay happy, healthy, and connected. A special congratulations to all the Gophers who graduated this semester. Until next time, signing off for Radio K's Real College Podcast, I'm Casey McCabe.